Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay on Wednesday, January the 7th. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. Coming up, the boss of South East Water faces renewed calls to resign after appearing before MPs. How the port of Ramsgate could be used in future to cut congestion on Kent's roads. And why a dog track in Kent is bucking the trend. But first, a waste company has apologised after workers were filmed taking a homeless woman's possessions from outside a store in Dover and dumping them in their truck. This is our most read story on the website today. And reporter Millie Bowles joins me now to explain more. So Millie, an onlooker captured this footage, which can be seen at Kent Online today. For those listening though, can you just describe what it shows?
So the footage shows two workers from Veolia, which is the council's waste contractor, picking up a pile of items from outside Boots and chucking them in the back of their waste lorry. Some of them appear to be in brand new packaging. You can see them putting them in the back and then they eventually shut it up and apparently drive away.
And from the footage, Millie, we can see it's not just things that she needs to live on the streets, but also what looks to be some personal items and gifts. Is that right?
So while it's not super clear what items are being chucked in the van, obviously we can see the mattress and we can see a duvet. A bag of possessions is also picked up, and a witness who saw this happen had seen what possessions this woman had on her before. She said there was a sentimental item, which was a small vase of flowers. And as she said, no one really knows what's in that bag and what counts as sentimental to that woman. She could have had medication, any number of things in her possessions, and they did take the whole lot. So,
and what's the response been from the company?
So a spokesperson for Veolia has said that they are very sorry that their items were incorrectly removed. And they said they understand the impact that it will have. There will also be refresher training for their street cleaning crews on how to handle requests to remove belongings, because it was requested that the pile outside Boots be removed via the council's public portal.
Millie, thank you ever so much for being on today's episode. You can also view that footage by clicking on the story at Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and a Chatham man who fled to Morocco after being involved in a violent burglary has been jailed. Zuhair Atiye was part of a masked gang who targeted a home near Luton Road in 2023 and assaulted the occupants and stole valuables. The 33-year-old from Wiltshire Close has been locked up for 8 years. A Dover man who threatened a woman with a gun and said he'd post intimate pictures online has been locked up. Paul Ayling was said to be drunk when he dragged his victim from his car before punching her. He'd attacked her sister just 3 days before. The 59-year-old from Pilgrim's Way has been sentenced to 26 months. He has to pay £85 and is the subject of a restraining order. Officers have shut down a flat in Tenterden following complaints about serious antisocial behaviour. Council bosses say there was evidence of drug use and extensive damage to the property in the Longfield area. A 3-month closure order means people are now banned from entering the apartment. Now, people living in Tunbridge Wells woke up to another day of water issues earlier. South East Water say a series of bursts at one of their sites yesterday was causing low pressure or no supply at all for some customers. It comes as boss David Hinton faced MPs yesterday over an outage that left customers without supplies for 2 weeks in the lead up to Christmas. You can hear exactly what he had to say to the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs Committee in yesterday's episode of the podcast. But the town's MP, Mike Martin, was listening in and gave us his reaction.
Dave Hinton was followed by the Chief Drinking Water Inspector for England and Wales, Marcus Rink. And Dr. Rink effectively contradicted all of the evidence of Dave Hinton, particularly around what caused the incident and how they responded to it. And Dr. Rink, who's the Chief Drinking Water Inspector for England and Wales, said that the incident was actually known about for several months rather than a surprise, as Dave Hinton said. It was avoidable rather than unavoidable. And DWI actually issued advice to South East Water in the months preceding the incident about what they needed to do. And had they followed that advice, They would have avoided this incident. So it's actually entirely South East Water's fault. And by extension, that is entirely Dave Hinton's fault as the chief executive of the organisation.
That kind of it seems to make the entire situation even worse, doesn't it? Particularly for those businesses who lost out on so much money just before Christmas, because we spoke at the time and they were losing out on thousands. And to hear that today, do you think there's going to be increased anger in Tunbridge Wells?
So the chair of the committee today, who has been an MP for 25 years, said that he had never seen such a jaw-dropping committee hearing to see the evidence of one person so completely contradicted by the evidence of another. And the people in Tunbridge Wells will be unbelievably furious about what Dave Hinton said, and also what Marcus Rink, the drinking water inspector, said. And I was up here today with a number of businesses and councillors from the borough council who are up representing their residents, and they were absolutely gobsmacked that South East Water knew about these problems, did nothing about them, didn't follow advice, which they're legally obliged to follow advice from the drinking water inspectorate, and therefore we had a crisis that was entirely avoidable. And when the crisis happened, they hadn't learned any lessons from previous crises, and so we had all the problems that everybody in Tunbridge Wells knows about in terms of drinking water stations and GPs and schools and all the rest of it. They failed to follow advice to prevent the crisis. They failed to follow advice to manage the crisis response. It's absolutely appalling.
Now, South East Water have apologised. At the time of recording today's podcast, they said supplies were expected to return to normal during the morning.
Kent Online reports.
Fire bosses in Kent have issued a safety warning after a washing machine started a blaze in Folkestone. Crews were called to Ware Bay Road just before 6 p.m. last night. There have been no reports of any injuries. We're being reminded to never run appliances overnight or while we're out of the house. The main stage and event space at an arts centre in Faversham will be closed until further notice following a devastating fire. An electrical fault is thought to have started the blaze at the Alexandra Centre on New Year's Eve. Bosses say they're working with other local venues to relocate as many events as possible. A logistics company is going to be prosecuted after a worker suffered a serious leg injury when a vending machine toppled down a staircase at a Kent power station. XPO Transport Solutions UK Limited, which is based in Northamptonshire, will face legal action over an alleged breach of health and safety rules. The accident happened while workers were trying to move the machine at the Dungeness site in March 2024. Now, there are suggestions supportive Ramsgate could open up again to help relieve pressure on Kent's roads. Plans are reportedly under consideration as part of the preparations to reopen Manston Airport for freight. But this all comes as Thanet District Council are actually looking to reduce the amount of money they have invested in the site to keep the facilities there in a working condition. So to clear all this up, let's hear first from Kent Online's business editor, Chris Britcher. He's been able to unpack the history of the port for us and explain a little about its current status.
The Port of Ramsgate has been a rather forlorn site over recent years. The 18-acre site has not seen a scheduled cross-channel ferry service since 2013 and only sporadic commercial use in the years since. There is some industry on the site, but it's all a far cry from its days as a popular ferry hub back in the 1980s and 90s. Owned by Thanet District Council, up until 2011 it was regularly delivering a profit to the local authority, but with a decline in use has come a drop in income. Its two roll-on, roll-off ferry berths are decaying and in need of repair. Costs for that and getting the port shipshape are north of £10 million, and there is no queue of companies wanting to operate services to or from the port. Port of Dover expressed interest last year in a 25-year concession to operate it, but that price tag put it off. However, the council faces a dilemma. It's part of a law dating back to 1847. Because it is a municipal port, in other words, it's owned by the council, it cannot simply close. It is obliged to remain open and operation under what is known as the open port duty. This effectively means it must be maintained so that any vessel willing to pay the suitable fee can dock there. But the council, given the little income it generates, can no longer afford to do so. So it's decided over the coming weeks to draft a harbour revision order, a move which would effectively end that open port duty commitment. However, It will take around 4 years as it's a lengthy legal process. In the meantime, the authority, and something of a rarity for Thanet, there's cross-party political support for this, is looking at various other options, which include the leasehold sale of the site and, more significantly, the freehold sale of the site, which would end the council's involvement. Quite what it could be used for remains anyone's guess at this point, but for such a prime site, anything which generates money to the local economy would be welcome. However, there are various other complications. One is that Thanet Council will soon be subsumed into a unitary authority as part of the shake-up of local councils. Thanet is alert to that and wants to ensure the financial drain of the port does not fall on the new authority's shoulders once it is established. There's also the issue of Royal Harbour Approach, the tunnel taking port traffic away from the town's roads and direct to the port complex. It needs £6 million of repairs to be able to handle the sort of freight traffic the port saw when it was active. It's another cost. Thanet Council has, it's fair to say, tried its best with the port, but we're looking increasingly like it could be set to sail into the history books in the coming years.
Well, Herne Bay and Sandwich MP Sir Roger Gale says being able to make use of shipping channels would reduce traffic.
The other very exciting prospect is the possibility of shipping goods directly from Manston via sea up to the Thames estuary. And that, of course, would take it off the roads to a very large extent.
Yeah, I mean, that would be hugely beneficial to have goods going, you know, up and through the River Thames, which I suppose is great for reducing traffic as well on the roads.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a very exciting prospect and it's under serious consideration. The owners of the airport and the potential operators are looking very closely indeed at how that might be made to work. Obviously, you've got to get the goods from the airport down to Port Ramsgate. And then around the North Foreland and up the Thames, up the coast and into the Thames estuary. So it's quite a complex operation, but it can be done. And if it takes the pressure off the roads still further, then that again would be a very good thing.
Kent Online reports.
There was a warning earlier that rain in Kent overnight could have caused incredibly icy patches on the roads and pavements in Kent. It was quite a tricky drive to work or school with a number of accidents reported in the county. The Met Office had actually issued a yellow alert for ice between midnight and 10 a.m. Well, don't forget that you can keep up to date with everything going on the county's roads by heading to the travel pages of Kent Online. We've got an interactive map there showing where the delays are. You can also hear regular travel updates by tuning in to our sister radio station, KMFM. A hard-hitting play written in Kent about young people and mobile phones is being performed in Parliament today. We've previously told you how Generation FOMO is based on interviews and conversations with students at schools and the Uni of Kent. It's been touring the county, raising awareness of the struggles faced by those with the fear of missing out. Well, playwright Isabel Defoe hopes today's performance will spark a conversation.
We heard Sojan Joseph, who's a Labour MP for Ashford, came to see the show at the university where my theatre company is based, at the University of Kent. And the show has been very much supported by them. Sojan came to see the show there in the spring, loved it, and has been working very hard alongside Whitstable Unplug, who I've been associated with now. They've been working really hard at getting the show to Parliament. And I think it means everything for the cast, for the actors, and my co-director, who are all Gen Z. It means so much to them because they, you know, Gen Z are the first ones to grow up online, to have their childhoods online. So to be able to take this show to a place where it could potentially make a difference, a real difference, is everything to them. It's huge.
And so when you're going to be doing the performance, I suppose, is there a central message? Is there a central theme that you're hoping, I suppose, that MPs will pick up on?
Yeah, I mean, with Whitstable Unplugged, we've been working alongside them about 20 different schools now around Kent and beyond, Canterbury and beyond, who are pledging together to become truly smartphone free. So the idea would really be for MPs to really pick up on that and to really make a difference for that. And also, we would love for smartphones to not be given to children under the age of 16, ideally, you know, and for social media to not be something that under 16s have access to, because we know the damage it does. So yeah, we're hoping that it will create some serious change.
I mean, it's come at quite a significant time as well where these discussions are being had. You know, we've seen the social media ban for under 16s brought in Australia, and these discussions are already being had about having smartphone-free childhoods and the benefits and sort of the impacts that it is having on young lives. So it is quite a significant time and quite an important moment for the movement.
Hugely. Yeah, hugely. And the young people, you know, they know that they have no attention span. They know that they're angry with the tech companies. They're angry with tech companies because they know that they have, you know, they've got their attention span in a way, you know, that they and that's and they don't know a difference, because if you're 13 or 14, you don't really know how to. It's hard enough for you and I, Kate, isn't it, to kind of put our phones down. You know, there you are, suddenly it's like, oh wow, I've been scrolling here for 45 minutes. But if you're 13 or 14, it's really hard to put that down. You know, we know it's addictive. And in fact, those kids that I interviewed, they're the ones that put the word addiction on the table, not I. They're the ones that really are completely aware of how addicted they are at such a young age, right?
Plans for dozens of lakeside apartments on a former quarry in Snodland have been given the go-ahead. Opponents had raised concerns about the impact on wildlife, but 2 years after the idea was first put forward, councillors have said 33 homes and 40 parking spaces can be built on land north of Cemetery Road. A Chatham woman who was left paralysed after suffering several strokes says making jewellery is what keeps her alive. Katerina Gerard was evacuated to the UK in 1998 during the Bosnian War. Injuries she sustained while in a detention centre have left her disabled. Well, she's taught herself how to craft rings, bracelets and necklaces with tools that she can hold between her teeth. The 49-year-old sells them to raise money for charities and stroke support groups. You can read her incredible story in full and watch a video at Kent Online. A new event space has opened up in Folkestone, taking over a site that's been abandoned for the last 50 years. The loft is situated on the upper floor of the Petticoat Emporium, which opened in June last year, but the building had previously been home to M&S and Wilko. It'll be used as a multi-use venue, hosting yoga sessions, cinema evenings and creative events. Businessman Cairo Woodward has created the space.
Loft is a three-tiered space, essentially. So you have photography, you have wellness, and you've got events. This multi-purpose space is something that is near and dear to my heart, because each one of those pillars is something that I have done in my own life, and I want to extend that and the ability to do all those different things in this space. We've also got many events coming up, one of which is going to be something called Aeroplane Mode, and I cannot wait to bring this to people, because I really want people to put down their phones and pick up a new friendship, a new community, and really feel that sense of togetherness like we used to. So I think what pushed us to create the loft is a communal need for a space to create. Not a space that's necessarily told, not necessarily a space in which you're told what you can do, but a space in which you're invited to see what you'd like to do and how far you can really push that. And I think that is the main thing that I think Folkestone needs, or this town needs, is a space that is not capped by somebody, by a company, or by people telling you you can't do something. I really want people to see how far the limits of their imagination can take them in this space.
And finally, villagers in Medway say their fight to save their local pub will continue despite two offers to buy it turned down. The Flying Saucer in Hempstead closed in 2024, and locals have since been granted asset of community value status, making it harder for the site to be sold to a property developer. So far, they've raised more than £650,000. It's believed the owners after £1.2 million.
Kent Online Sports.
Starting off with football, and Gillingham defender Logan Dobbs has joined Ramsgate on loan until the end of the season. The 19-year-old's made three first-team appearances for the Gills, all in the EFL Trophy this season, and he scored in a 4-1 win over Fulham's under-21s. He could make his debut for the Rams against Chichester on Saturday. Meantime, Gillingham have been given until today to respond to the FA after a scrap broke out following their game against Colchester United. Both sides were charged by the governing body after the confrontation on on the pitch at the final whistle on December the 29th. They're accused of failing to ensure their players and technical staff didn't behave in an improper way. On to cricket now, and England have staged a bit of a comeback on the penultimate day of the final Ashes test against Australia. The tourists closed on 302 for 8 in Sydney. That's a lead of 119 runs. Kenzak Crawley could only manage one in the second innings, though. England have already lost the series, but are hoping to avoid another defeat. And finally, the Kent Online podcast has been hearing how Kent's only greyhound racing track has managed to survive when so many others have shut down. Central Park in Sittingbourne has been running dog races since 1994. Bosses say the business is still going strong despite other sites, including in Ramsgate and Canterbury, closing over recent years. Our reporter Joe Crosley has been chatting to Regan James, who's the operations manager at Central Park.
The sport of greyhound racing in itself is in the decline, which I don't like saying, but it is what it is. And we've done a lot of development here. So we've spent £500,000 on a new track a couple of years ago. So that's brilliant. All singing, all dancing. And we've done a lot of development upstairs in a restaurant and our bar area. So a lot of decorating, a lot of just trying to bring the place back to where it should be, really.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about welfare of dogs, because you've had a protest out here. It was quite a small one.
Yeah.
Of people saying that, you know, it should be banned.
Yeah.
What would you say to those people? And maybe could you clear up some misconceptions about the welfare of dogs?
Yeah, so greyhounds are treated incredibly well. I've been to many kennels, as obviously we've got a kennels here, but I've been to many actual greyhound kennels and they're immaculately kept. Dogs are well fed, dogs are walked every day, obviously they're exercised there, and the greyhounds love to run. I know people think they're forced to, but they're not at all, honestly. If you've got a greyhound off a lead, it would run because that's what they love doing. So yeah, it's just a complete misconception. I think it's just an education thing more than anything. I think people just read stories and sort of go, oh, this is awful. But I think it's just an education thing. People just need to come along and see what goes on. It's racing, so obviously things happen. But honestly, they are so well kept, so well looked after, nurtured for. Yeah, it's brilliant. The thrill of it, when the hare goes past and the traps open, you hear the roar of the people in the restaurant and outside. It gets the hairs on the back of your neck going. So you'll have a good night, you'll have a good time.
So you've been here almost a decade, around a decade, not to make you feel old. Yeah. But talk to me a little bit about how you've seen things change.
Yeah, so Ark, who own the site now, took over 4 to 5 years ago. And like I said, we've had massive financial backing. So like I said, we've had a new track, restaurant painted, decorating, and everything's just been brought up a level for the whole site, really. So it was great before. I'm not saying it wasn't. I loved it before. And it's great now.
Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.